next budget year and the year after that and probably the year after that. And that is on top of $330,000 in cuts that we have absorbed over the last 3 years. We don't know what we'll get from the state. We don't know what we'll get from the federal government. We are trying to hold the line and continue to maintain the program service that you've come to depend on. And we've cut every place that we could think of cutting. So the situation continues to be a little bit challenging, to say the least. Now, the good news is that you can change that. You can make the difference by picking up the telephone and making a call and making a pledge. We can go to you to make up for those cuts, to continue to maintain the level of service that you believe is important. If you didn't think the radio station was good, you wouldn't be listening. So what we want you to do is be more than just a listener. We want you to be a supporter of the station. And it's very easy to do. We'll take just a minute or two. You can do that right now, as a matter of fact, by calling 244-9455. 217 is the area code if it would be a long-distance call for you. And if you're not a supporter of the station, we'd really like to hear from you. We're hoping that this week we can raise $150,000, and that will get us on our way to our overall fundraising goal for the year. Right now, we're raising the money this year that we will spend next year, next fiscal year, and that begins the 1st of July. So it's important we hear from as many people as possible. If you appreciate Focus 580 and All Things Considered and Afternoon Magazine and Morning Edition and all the other shows we have on the station, we need to hear from you this week. 244-9455 is the number, and we appreciate that very much. We're also pleased to have here on the program, as I said, Jean Redpath. She is well known now, internationally known, as a performer of Scottish traditional music, very well known for her recordings of music of Robert Burns, and now has many, many CDs, even vinyl. I think I still have some things on vinyl that you recorded
back in the vinyl age.
they're sitting there. I'm still not quite sure how to work them anymore, but if people are interested in Jean's music, there are many opportunities to hear it. You can go down to your favorite place to buy music and look for her recordings. Now on CD, many, many of them. She has performed here in Champaign-Urbana before, coming up, I think, at I don't know if we want to call it the end of the year or the beginning of the next year. New Year's Eve, all right, to do another performance with the chorale.
I'm looking forward to
that's
that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that would be your next opportunity to hear her in person here in Champaign-Urbana. And if you'd like to call in and talk with her as well, you can do that. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, it's really nice to have you here.
It's lovely to be here, and I thank you for arranging this weather. It's splendid.
Well, it's pretty good. Now, it's been a little odd the last few weeks. It was in the 80s, and then it was in the 30s, and you really don't know what it's going to be. That's the old saying about the Midwestern weather, you know. If you don't like it, just wait.
Mm-hmm.
You live part of your time in the United States now.
Sarasota, Florida.
Sarasota. Well, then that's probably fairly much the same no matter.
By the looks of things, the temperatures here and the temperatures there are going to be almost exactly the same this coming weekend. Why would I travel?
Well, we're glad that you're here.
Glad to be here.
It's something I sat and thought to myself, now, is there anything I could possibly ask you that you've never been asked in all the time that you've been working and being interviewed? And I'm sure the answer is no, probably not.
Well, if there were, the chances are I wouldn't give you the opportunity, would I?
Well, that was my next thought. I said, well, yeah, I sure could ask those things, but she's really not going to say. Let me ask you this question. Something that for people who enjoy listening to folk music and singer-songwriter music, one of the things that's always guaranteed to start a lively discussion, if not an argument, is to ask people, what is folk music?
I haven't the remotest idea,
yeah,
David.
I'm sure that if some people, maybe they'd be honest and say, well, I don't know. Some people have a definition, and it's different from other people's. Is that, you think, even a useful kind of a term?
No. Because anyone of my vintage is going to have really negative connotations, because folk music was the pop music of the day in the 60s in a huge revival. And unfortunately, it was portrayed in those early days by the great unwashed. And I've found it difficult, even in the last 10 or 15 years, to come across people who expect something quite different from what I regard as a proper approach, and one that accords the material, the audience, and the performer due dignity. Mm-hmm. So folk music, yes. Who was it? Leadbelly said, all music is folk music. Horses don't sing. There is a quote somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Oral transmission is a little easier to deal with, and then it really doesn't matter if it's orally transmitted. Sooner or later, it's going to be folk music.
Mm.
I don't like the expression, but that's because of this connotation from early years.
Well, you have recorded and performed a lot of different kinds of music, both traditional music and music by contemporary songwriters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For you, when you're looking at a piece of music or a song and thinking about whether or not that's something that you'd like to perform, is there anything that's consistent where you say, well, you could identify something about the music that you say, well, this is something that I want to do and I can tell you why?
The first half, yes, this is something I want to do. I don't often know exactly why. First, the melody. I think, as with Burns, if the melody doesn't go straight for the tear ducts or straight for the eye or straight for the gut, there's no real reason to learn it. And the words are important, yes, but I have been profoundly moved in the past listening to a singer deliver a song in a language that I understood none of at all.
Mm.
So melody, yes, and the ability of the melody to convey the emotion that the words help with.
Huh.
So I don't think lyrics are the first thing that has to be. A tune, if there's no tune, why bother?
And that's something that you just, about the old joke about I couldn't give you a definition, but I know it when I hear it.
Yes.
That's just that kind of
I think
reaction.
It's a very personal thing. It's very, very personal because the great trick, of course, is that I assume since I've gone to the trouble to learn a song that everybody else is going to love it. And I think if you don't come from that basic premise, then you probably shouldn't get up on your hind legs on a stage.
Have there been songs that you thought you really liked and you said, well, I'd like to do this song, and then you put it into your performances and that you got the feeling back, the audience just not loving it, and you thought, well, I guess I'll take this one out?
Never, David. Good heavens, never. No, they love everything I do.
Well, I'm sure that people aren't throwing things, but I'm not sure how you as a performer judge what it is. I suppose it could be in the reaction of people when you're finished, or maybe there's something even as you're singing and you're looking out there, something that you can actually see, so you know, now this song is really, I'm really getting to them, or you're thinking, this is not working. They're not getting this.
There's a Geiger counter. There's an emotional Geiger counter. It's probably intuition that's involved. And since I work without a program, the first three songs will tell me more or less what I have in front of me by way of an animal, and I go from there. There are always songs that I am currently very fond of and I'm determined to sing whether the audience wants to hear them or not, but I have to place them so that if it's an audience that's looking to be entertained and made to laugh, then I go that route, and then when they're least expecting them, hit them with something a little different. Or once in a while, you get an audience which is really quite serious-minded, and I have to work a little hard to loosen them up a bit.
Hmm.
The Geiger counter at its best, or the performance at its best, or really what it is, the communication between singer and audience at its best, raises physical goosebumps up the back of my legs and right over the crown of my head. It doesn't happen very often, but that's what one goes for every time.
Yeah. You did not set out back to when you were at university, at least, you didn't set out to be a singer, and you, as far as I know, I think it's true, never had formal voice training. When you got here to the United States in 1961, I think that it was.
And, now you've done your homework.
Well, it's all on your website. And you, for the first time, got up on stage and started performing. I mean, what was it that got you that very first time to do that, stand up in front of an audience and sing?
Hunger.
You were just trying to keep body and soul together.
Pretty much so. I had been 3-4 months in California. I had a roof over my head when I emigrated, so I was luckier than many. I didn't have to worry about where I was going to sleep and how I was going to eat. But when I did make the big jump from California to the East Coast, it was more or less coming off the high board without checking if there was water in the pool first, because it turned out that there really wasn't a job that I had been promised, and I had no funds per se. And the gig, the hoot nanny at Gertie's Folk City, was serendipitous. It was purely accidental. I have led, I say this as often as I get the chance, I have led a charmed existence. Seems to me that I always managed to fall on my feet. And right at the beginning, the job I went there to do didn't exist, but a better one was just up the pike. So it was accidental, purely accidental. It was a hoot nanny. I sang 2 weeks running and was offered a job. And the only time I've really gone quite hungry were the intervening 2 months until that job came up.
What'd they pay you that first time out?
I can't recall, but I do remember that the job that I came east for was $175 a week. And at that point, I was doing $1 an hour casual labor. So $175 sounded like a lot of money to me. Well, it was a lot of money at that point.
Uh-huh.
One could live on it, but... So it was peanut butter and jelly for a good long while. But I think a rather more serious answer to your question, and one that I suggest to anybody who asks me now whether or not they should do this, if you have any choice, no, do something else. And if you have no choice, and apparently I didn't, although I didn't realize it, then you're one of the lucky ones. Yeah. Go for it.
So you believe in fate and destiny, that sort of thing?
As long as I have control over them, yes.
Jean Redpath is our guest this morning. If you'd like to talk, 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line. Go to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. You'll come right here to this program. No pledging will be required. That would be nice, of course. We'd like it if you did, but you don't have to. 333-9455. We do, by the way, have some copies of one of Jean's CDs. It's titled Now and Then. Is this new? No, it's not. It's from 1999, but it's relatively recent of vintage. And what we're doing, I think what we decided we would do is have a drawing, and if people would call in, we'll put their names into a hat and draw them out. And I think that we have three copies. So if people would like to get on the drawing, they can call our pledge line, 244-9455. And it would be really nice if you made a pledge, but you don't have to. Okay. When you did those first performances, you must have been terrified. I still would be
catatonic.
Today.
Catatonic. I can still remember the sensation of my heels drumming on the floor. I was shaking from head to foot.
How did you?
Sheer bloody mindedness.
So you just said, "I'm just doing it, and that's that," and I'm here, and I'm darned if I'm going to run off.
I really don't know hunger, that was, you know, tongue-in-cheek. But indeed, if one is offered a paying job and it's a little difficult, then get over the difficulty, deal with it. And there's also always has been and was from early days. Once I got past the disgusting age of 11, where everybody had to look in the other direction and turn the lights off in the room before I would utter a note. I mean, who could be bothered with a kid like that? Once I got past that stage, a certain amount of stage fright is healthy, I think. Gets the adrenaline pumping. And there's always the challenge of, I am, not so much now, but was then, working with foreign language material. How do you bridge that gap? Because songs will do it when talk won't, despite the amount of the latter that I do.
Yeah. Well, you do have to do a little of that, because you want to, if there's a story behind the song, you want people to appreciate the story a little bit. And if there's language that's unfamiliar, you maybe want at some point to explain to people what it is that they're going to hear. So it won't be completely, you know, melody is great, but you want people also to have a feeling for what the song is about.
One of the biggest problems with that, David, of course, is that all of the really lovely tunes are sad ones. The sad song seem to have the melodies that really, or maybe because I'm a manic depressive, who knows, but I really go for those particular tunes. And the up-tempo ones, the melodies, the dance tunes that people might associate with Scotland, are so fast that the words are unintelligible, possibly even to a native speaker. And there's a limit to how long you can take to translate a song which lasts for a minute and 15 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's something to be said for the power of a sad song.
A lot to be said for it. If you're a Scot, it's the only way out. You know, we were born without tear ducts. Did you know that?
I did not know that. No tear ducts. That's very interesting.
But incomparable music.
Well, I'm sure a long, long time ago when we talked, I made some sort of flippant comment about Celtic music being just obsessed with sad themes and suffering, and I'm maybe no more than other kinds of music. I mean, everybody's got music like that, and it's a way of exercising the feelings, getting them out. I do somehow think that Irish and Scottish music has some of the sweetest sad music,
Celtic melancholia,
in the world. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's just because I'm of that tribe myself.
Have you ever spent a winter in there?
No, I'm sure that would explain a lot. Northerly climes tends to be a little overcast, a little on the damp side.
And Scotland, more than Ireland, a really quite harsh country. It's a harsh mother.
Mm-hmm. And that comes out in the music?
I think so. Yeah. And the whiskey.
Well, now, that's if you have to endure those conditions...
It helps. Purely medicinal, of course.
It does. Well, yeah, in moderation. You know, you don't want to overdo things like that. When you first started performing it, and you were also maybe sharing some of the same stages, or in a sense, with people who went on to become well-known folk, we'll put that in quotes, performers here in the United States, who were also trying to do some reviving of American traditional music, mm-hmm. and also were writing their own music in that kind of style. How were you received doing your music that was coming from the British Isles by them? Did they think that that was sort of foreign, or did they realize that there was an important connection between that music and then the traditional music of America?
Now there's a question I've never been asked before.
Oh, thank you.
Even one that I can answer. I don't think there was ever any judgment of any kind. If there was, I wasn't aware of it. But since we were all more or less the same age and more or less the same stage of development, I think there was a marvelous camaraderie. I know that I wouldn't have survived those first years knowing nothing at all about, as it was then, the coffee house circuit, hadn't it been for the groups and the lads in Greenwich Village who would come in off the road and say, try so-and-so in, you know, Oklahoma, or give so-and-so a call in Chicago. It's a great club, and I was telling them about you. And we, of course, traded the favors. But I don't think anybody ever stopped to wonder, apart from the fact that I talked funny. And the accent, which, of course, at home, educationally, is... in my generation, was a real stumbling block. You got rid of it as quickly as possible, and the closer you came to sounding like a BBC announcer, the more educated you were likely to be regarded as. Whereas in this country, the accent is an enormous boon. I would be crazy to lose it. So I go home every summer to make sure I don't.
Do a little maintenance?
And yes, brush up my accent.
I see. Well, I was listening. I have just happened to be listening to Fiona the other day, Thistle and Shamrock, over the weekend, and I was thinking she was laying it on a bit thick. But, you know, maybe it's important. Maybe
it's
important.
We're back to hunger again, David.
Our guest this morning, Jean Redpath, and we're really pleased to have her here. She's just visiting in Champaign-Urbana. As we mentioned, a New Year's Eve, she'll be giving a performance here in Champaign-Urbana with the chorale. Mm-hmm. So if you would like to hear her perform, that's an opportunity. That will be your next opportunity. Of course, you can go to wherever it is you like to buy music, and you can look for her CDs. She has recorded many, many of them. And also, we actually have some this morning we want to try and give away as a way of encouraging people to also make a pledge mm-hmm. to the radio station. Jay Pierce, our station manager here, has slipped into the studio to help out with the strong arm tactics that we've
that
compelled
so
to apply.
Familiar
that you're so except for my no. People who are listening to us, they should appreciate
wimp.
The fact that we're just not like that. Maybe we'd be more successful if we were, but we're just not.
That's not our style. It never has been. And you know, I mean, you're the one that always comes up with it. What is it? Substance over style. Dare to be dull.
The whatever. Program that dares to be dull. Focus 580, you know, that's one of our mottos.
And, you know, I take that to public radio conventions and I mention that and they're like, oh, don't say that. Like, well, you know, we've been very successful by laying all our cards on the table and being a very real radio station. That's how we've succeeded all these years, thanks to your contributions at 217-244-9455. And you know, in the year and a half that I've been the manager here, I've seen no reason to change that and start strong-arming people and going to a more, I don't know, commercial style, even though some in public radio are kind of going like that. And it's a necessity in some areas because federal funding, state funding, university funding in a lot of cases is not increasing. In fact, it's going the other direction. That's happening here. Here, we've been very lucky. This community, all of the communities we serve have really come through in supporting this radio station in its 83-year history by listening to it, by talking about it, by appreciating it, by donating to it, and helping to support it and build it into what it is. With your support, we'll continue to be the radio station you want us to be into the future. And 217-244-9455 is the way you support it. You can also get in on the drawing that we're having. Maeve Riley is out in Pledge Central. And Maeve, how are we doing on the challenge that we have? This is a challenge from one of our business friends.
Right.
To hear from 15 people by
right.
the end of Focus today.
Yeah, if we hear from 15 people, Peckham and Associates will contribute $250 to our pledge total. And right now we're at 12, so we just need to hear from three more folks.
Wow.
And then we'll get $250 added. So that's just one more incentive for you to give us a call, 217-244-9455. Okay. Don't forget when you call and make a contribution, or you can just call and ask to be entered into the drawing for Gene Redpath's new CD, Then and Now. And it's got some great songs on it. One of them's called Davy and Jeannie, and I just wondered if Gene had any, you know, was she thinking of David?
When Dave and Gene are in the studio.
No,
they're in the studio
to
together.
She,
okay, okay. It's one of those melancholy ones, right?
Yeah,
okay. All right.
That's great, Maeve. That is great news. And three more calls. We'll meet that challenge. And Barbara Peckham, thank you very much. A great friend of WILL. Gene, thank you very much for not only being here, but offering the CDs, you know, in the drawing.
I can't sell them. I have to give them away.
Stop. 217-244-9455. Let's take care of the challenge. $250. You know, in the grand scheme of things, David, people always say, well, what's my $40 mean? Well, your $40 means a lot because right now it's helping to leverage $250. Your $40 would be incentive for someone else to contribute $40. This is how we do it. Thousands of people are in the Friends of WILL. And as you add, you know, each of the $40, $60, $120 together, that's how we come up with $850,000 by the end of this fiscal year in listener support that'll be required just to keep the status quo in the next fiscal year in the face of the 4% cut from the university allocation. We don't know what the federal government's doing yet. The current bill that's in Congress, unless they change it, the recommendation from the administration would amount to as much as a 25% reduction in the federal allocation to the direct grant, what's called the Community Service Grant, and that's the grant that we get from the federal government to help operate the stations and buy programs from NPR and the like. So there's the scenario. The number is 217-244-9455. You've known for the past 30 years that we've been doing fundraising and the like on WILL. You know the drill. There's the number, 244-9455. We're going to meet the challenge from Peckham & Associates for $250. We're going to give away some CDs, and now let's enjoy some more conversation.
Right,
that's what we're
we'll
here for.
That. Our guest is Jean Redpath. She was born in Edinburgh in Scotland. She went to the University of Edinburgh, started out with the idea of majoring in medieval studies, but very soon discovered the School of Scottish Studies there at the university, which is interested in collecting and preserving the oral traditions of the country, and among other things has a very large archive of tapes and discs of instrumental music and tales and ballads from both the Scots and Gaelic-speaking areas of Scotland. And she came here to the United States in 1961. We've told that story with not much money in her pocket, ended up in Greenwich Village and performed there. And then after that and since has toured all over the country and all over the world performing music, has many CDs of her music. So if you want to go down to wherever you buy your music, I'm sure that you can find some. She's particularly known for the songs of Robert Burns that she has recorded. So there are a lot of different kinds of music. That music, Scottish traditional music, some music by contemporary songwriters, a big mix of stuff, and all of that available wherever you buy recorded music. And I do also want to mention one more time that Gene will be here back here again to perform New Year's Eve with the Chorale. And we want to thank Julie Byler for bringing Gene over and making it possible for us to have her here in the studio. And if you'd like to talk with her, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think we do have somebody here getting lined up to talk with you. Yes, we do. In Champaign, line number one. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
David, I have made my pledge.
Thank you.
And I want to get in the queue for the CD. And I want to ask Jean Ridpath, how did she happen to get hooked up with Prairie Home Companion? Because that's how I first became acquainted with her and her singing.
It was all a huge mistake.
Oh no, it wasn't.
In early days,
up and listen online.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks
for the call.
In early days, Prairie Home Companion was really quite small and quite local, and only part of what Garrison and Margaret were doing. This is now 1976 or 7, I think he started. And I first was invited to sing in 1979. And what happened was that they were not in a position to be bringing anybody in to perform on that radio show. So what they did was run a concert series as well. So it was a fairly hefty weekend's work. You did a rehearsal in the morning, you did a concert between certain hours in the evening, and then you went and did a radio show at night, and they taped it, and it's gradually developed from there. So I first met Garrison under fairly informal and hard working, because he was also running a radio show, I think, 5 days a week in the morning at that stage. So, you know, this raises the whole subject of, we've talked a lot about money, it raises the whole subject of why most of us are in this business in the first place. It actually has nothing to do with money. If we were looking for money, we'd be doing something else. As a friend of my family once said to me, a much older man, after I had been doing this for 25 or 30 years, "Are you still singing?" I said, "Aye, Davy, I am." He says, "Is it not about time you got a job?" I think if you see it as a job, you are doomed to all sorts of disappointments. Words I hesitate to use because they don't really come within the Scottish lexicon at all. Words like dedication and passion and things that are worth doing for no immediate gratification that you can see, and certainly very little by way of monetary return. I'm thrilled that an awesome talent like Garrison has reached as many people as he has, but he wouldn't have done that had he not been prepared to put all those hours in on the radio and public radio at the time. I owe a great deal to public radio one way and another, because as an itinerant, as a peripatetic for nearly 30 years, the one place that you could always look for a sympathetic ear and sympathetic people was in the local public radio station. GBH in Boston, FMT in Chicago, and an all-night show in Los Angeles, which was a novel experience for me, too, to go to work at 1 o'clock in the morning. And I think what I come here for, so we've mentioned the chorale a couple of times, what I come here for is a recharge. I get tired of listening to myself sing, and it struck me quite forcibly last May when I was working with Julie in the chorale that what I had missed was the effect that seeing other people, 70 other people with the same kind of passion and dedication, making a gorgeous sound and touching the folk in the hall. From the other side of the footlights, that was... It was an inspiration.
Yeah. Well, and certainly I think one of the things you really have to acknowledge that Julie does is she's really interested in trying to foster young people who have talent and who want to sing.
The concert the other night was mind-blowing. It really was mind-boggling because I had a very brief brush with them. Makes it sound like flu, doesn't it? Last May, and heard only the two youngsters who had come back in and the current winner. This year I had the chance to hear the young man who was straight out of high school last year after a year away, and the maturation of that voice and persona, just staggering. It has to be incredibly gratifying to know that you're doing that. And one of the reasons I keep coming back here is that I wish to God somebody in Scotland had the gumption to do for Scottish music what Julie is doing for choral music with the chorale here. There doesn't seem to be the same kind of drive, the same kind of initiative, the same kind of passion in Scotland for her own culture, at least not in any individual that I've found, and I think it usually falls to the individual.
That's sad. It seems sad
to
me.
It's tragic.
Particularly now that it seems that there is perhaps it's small, but I think a growing interest in this country, in Celtic music, in music from Wales and Scotland and Ireland. And you'd think that people in the places where that music came from, they would say, hey, we've got a vibrant tradition here. It's continuing to grow. We should preserve the music. And then, of course, we have new performers all the time coming along, adding to it, giving their own spin, doing different things with it. And it's a living, breathing, alive thing, and that we ought to honor that and do everything we can to keep it going.
I have to tell you, I just had a flash of one of my early real clangers, David. I was flapping my lip, full of adrenaline, after a concert. Somebody asked me about how I kept enthusiasm going, how I stayed passionate about what I was doing, and I'm ranting away about just exactly what you said. And I said, after all, it's always developing. It's always growing. Folk music is a living orgasm, and we're all involved in it all. And there was a funny look went across the face of a couple of the people that were looking at me. And being basically a ham, I finished the conversation and I went into the ladies' room and had hysterics. And I thought, well, it's not really what I meant to say, but it...
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not at all. No, it's... I think this is the prophet hath no honour, and I'm not talking personally. I mean, there is always an edge there of, I wish it were different, but it isn't. It never has been, nor do I think ever will be, because what happens is the folk who are coming up in Scotland working with traditional music are never ever going to make a living at it, and what I like to think of as the acne of their professions is to be invited to the States to perform. And what they come back saying, oh, it was wonderful, it was great, we got such a great reception, and they treated us like human beings. It's very odd. And I'm very silent on the subject, as you can tell.
Yes, I, next time maybe you'll tell us what you really think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. How long have you got?
Well, I tell you, we have another caller here. We'll talk with them in Champagne. That's line number one. Hello.
Hola. Very interesting, especially like the Prairie Home Companion. And nothing personal, but maybe please discuss how a wandering minstrel handles the tax question, inland revenue. Does the National Health Service cover people overseas, and so on and so forth? Thanks.
How do I handle IRS? Very carefully. Life for 30 years since I was always casual labor, I'm self-employed, consisted of collecting every piece of paper for every nickel I spent, and then facing 3 or 4 weeks in one place, if I could manage it, to organize them into something approaching a tax return. At this point, I am an American resident, a British citizen, and for my sins, I get to file a tax return in America and another one in Britain. I also am doing business as a distributing company, so I get to file a Schedule C as an AKA as well. I presumably would not be allowed to die at the roadside if I depended on the health system in Britain, but there is a charge over there for things like prescriptions. I am covered by Medicare since I have paid, like everybody else, all of my working days in this country, which now number, would you believe, nearly 45 years. It's hard to imagine. And I'm subject to the same rules as anybody else earning in this country and have to keep my nose clean and the paperwork up to date. And thank God for the computer and Quicken.
And you do that yourself? You don't have an accountant to do that for you?
I have a lot of support, but basically it's up to me to keep track of the figures and feed those figures to the bookkeeper and the CA in Scotland and the tax preparer here.
Okay. Well, questions, business or otherwise, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. One of the things that when I think of you and I think of your music and that I think for me distinguishes you from a lot of other singers is the feeling that I have that for you, it's about the songs. And it's not that way for all singers. I think that there are some singers for whom it's about them, and the song be damned. But I guess with you, I do have that feeling that that's for you what it's about. It's not so much about Gene Rethbath. It's about the songs.
Boy, I've done a job on you, haven't I?
Well, you know, I could be completely wrong, but that's kind of what I.
It's a very fine line to walk, David, because basically, one will get both the respect and the fee that one thinks one is worth. So you have to have a certain amount of confidence. In fact, I was quoting to Julian Allen the other day, having run into a singer once who said that her voice, she said, I had a 4-octave range. My singing teacher said I was the voice she had waited all of her life for, and I had the self-confidence of a chicken. And the voice teacher said to her, to sing, you have to have elbows. And I think the only thing I would say about your comment is the elbows don't have to be too pointed and they don't have to be dug into too many ribs to get you where you're going. Mm. But the elbows have to be there. In other words, there's got to be a certain amount of self-confidence. Happily, although I had a lot of stage fright about my presentation, it has never, ever occurred to me that the material with which I work is not eminently worth listening to. Mm. And that presumably was a gift from wherever. My parents, my background, a couple of early teachers, not voice teachers, but teachers who, you know, encouraged me in this field of endeavor. About the song, yes. Why else am I up there? I mean, I could presumably sing a French art song. I love to sing French art song, but there is no justification for my trying to, in quotes, sell that to the rest of the world. I just think people should hear these songs because they're gorgeous.
Well, and I don't want to make it sound like I think that your voice somehow doesn't matter, because something about the way that you put the material across, it seems to put the music center stage. But I don't mean to take away from you or your voice, because it's certainly very distinctive. I'm feeling fairly confident. If someone sat me down and played a recording of you, I could tell. I would know who it was, first of all. And there is a wonderful quality about your singing that.
Don't stop, David. You're doing a wonderful job.
It's sort of unvarnished in a way. I mean, it's sort of clean and I don't know. You certainly have a stage persona that is by this time very comfortable. So maybe that's the thing. I mean, maybe that's when I've seen you perform, it doesn't look like you're out to impress anybody particularly, that you have nothing to prove at this point. You're there to entertain. You're there to give a good performance. But that it's really, you know, like I've said about 100 times now, it's really about it's about the music. That's the important thing.
I think somewhere au fond, I really believe that my brief this time around was to be part of the oral chain. Whether or not I can persuade Scotland to change its cumulative mind about the worth of its traditional music is really beside the point. There are singers from whom I learned that are very much with me in the middle of many of these songs. And I know, bless their hearts, because they've told me that are singers coming after who are doing it because they've heard me, and that's as it should be. But this has nothing at all to do with having people sound like me. Nobody should ever sound like anybody else. I would also put it down largely to the fact that, again, my oft-mentioned bloody-mindedness meant that education, musical education, never took. I was in every final of every singing competition all the way through school and never won anything, because I've always had a very clear idea of what that song should sound like, and nobody was going to change my mind. And that's not what the teacher wanted, and that's not what the adjudicator wanted. Mm-hmm. And we were taught traditional music, although when I think about it, it's unrecognizable at the time. But thank you for those few kind words.
Well, it's worked pretty well for you now, all low these many years.
Yes, it has. Yeah. I see no reason to change. I've tried country and western. It doesn't fly.
Well, when you kick back and you put on music to listen to for yourself, for your own personal enjoyment, what do you like to listen to?
It depends a lot on the mood that I'm in. If it's late in the evening, it's very likely to be a Celtic instrumental, because I can't listen to voices too easily without a different kind of attention. I'm aware of phrasing. I'm aware of breathing. I'm aware of... I wouldn't sing that line quite like that. It's much too subjective. But instrumental, since I don't play an instrument, I can enjoy fiddle particularly. I like Scottish fiddle music, any kind of fiddle music. If I'm in big messy soprano mode, then I will put an operatic mezzo on, or a tenor. A big voice, crank up the volume. And I have favourites there too. And it's interesting that although I can appreciate vocal quality, skill, training, control, it's always the gut that goes for me. Yeah. If there isn't some kind of gut feeling behind the song, even if I've heard that aria 1,000 times, it's just an exercise. Oh, I, too, am much affected by whether or not the singer is there for the singer or for the song.
I think is interesting, and I guess I'm not a close follower of singers, except that probably there are some that if you played them, I could tell you who they were, that people who do know they could tell you. It could be a recording of somebody that they had not heard sing that particular music before, say. Mm-hmm. If you played it for them, The dedicated follower of singers would say, oh, well, that's Renata Tabaldi. I could tell you who that is. Of the first few notes out of her mouth, I could say, well, that's who it is. So obviously there are qualities in voice that are, if you pay enough attention to it and if you hear the singer long enough, you'll know that person no matter what it is that they're singing. Though singers, it makes it sound as if what you're saying is that singers, people who do that, listen to other singers probably differently, more closely, maybe, than even if you're a huge opera fan and you listen to lots and lots of singers and you know their voices very well. If you're a singer, you listen more critically than even that person who just lives and breathes opera?
I would think so. I listen to a voice because I like the sound of that voice. It almost doesn't matter what he or she is singing. As opposed to having to get the most recent recording of an opera because the word is that this is a better production than the last one. I can listen to the same voice singing all afternoon if necessary, if that's the mood I'm in. The problem with listening to anything on a traditional level is that there is always part of my mind thinking, that's a nice song. I think I might like to learn that. And that flips you into a different gear entirely. entirely. Mm-hmm. So that's maybe why I listen to a lot of instrumental. South American flute music, South American Andean music, Hawaiian flat pick guitar, Hawaiian slack key guitar particularly is a great favorite. That's wonderful laid-back music.
Yeah, very, very good. Did you, when you changed to analog recordings on vinyl and you went to digital recordings on compact disc, was that at all jarring for you?
Yes, I found it hard to begin with. It took, there's a warmth to analog that digital still has trouble with. I think the gap has closed considerably, but I missed the warmth.
Yeah. It's funny, because that, again, I think probably one of those things you're going to get an argument from people.
Of course.
About. But that I think that that's there. And that was my guess, that having recorded the one way and gotten used to hearing what that sounded like, that it could be when that very first time, I could imagine someone saying, what is wrong with this? Mm-hmm. Something is not right here. And not only is it not right, I don't like it. I don't like the way that it sounds.
In a different sense, quite literally, it was a little like Mediterranean or Arizona sunshine after Scottish sunshine. It's the real hard edges and dark shadows as opposed to wonderful soft light all around.
I know exactly what you mean. I think that's a nice metaphor. Yeah. Well, I think we're about at the point where we're going to have to finish up. One more time, I do want to mention that our guest, Gene Redpath, will be here a few months hence and will be doing a performance with the chorale.
Can I come talk to you then, too?
Well, of course you can.
Good.
Anytime that you were in Champaign-Urbana, you could come and be on this program.
All right.
I would be
Maybe about three weeks, I'll be back, okay?
Okay, give us a call. We'll see if we got some openings. New Year's Eve, Gene will be performing with the chorale, so you can look forward to that. And then, as I said, any place you go out and buy music, you can look for her recordings. There are, how many are there now?
43.
That's a lot. And you're still going to still kind of keep going for a while, you think?
Yes. I may be in the baritone range fairly soon, but I haven't quit yet. Not yet.
All right. Well, we hope not. We hope that you continue for as long as you're wanting to go.
Yeah. I'll have to be shot, David.
There are people who might like to shoot me, but often I think, yeah, they're just going to carry me out of here feet first. One day, I hope to have my double espresso come down here, do the show, and then say, oh, well, I guess we're going to need a substitute tomorrow because Dave is dead. They have archives. They could play reruns for a while until they decide what they want to do.
That's the perfect way to go. You know, the expression that we have taken in hand with is happy, healthy, happy, healthy, happy, healthy, dead.
That sounds good to me. For those of us who know nothing else to do, that's the way we're going to have to do it.
Good.
Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, David.
Gene Redpath. Before we go here, let me tell you one thing. It's really important. Focus 580 is made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates. This year, celebrating their 23rd anniversary, Bodywork has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. The broadcast is also made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine in Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the series collector to the first-time buyer. Tastings held every Friday from 6 to 8, Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com. And not only do we get support from these fine folks, we get support from a lot of people who listen to this radio station. Not all of them, but some of them. And if you're not one of them, now is the time to change that. You can call us, 244-9455. Make a pledge. That's what we're here doing this week. Jay Pierce is also with us in the studio.
Not some of them, but all of them. Some of them. And I thought you were going to
Some of the times, and not all the time.
The one on the right is in the middle. In the middle is on the left. And 244-9455 is our phone number. Yeah, David, you know, and Gene, thanks for being here today. It was a great hour. And thanks for the CDs. We're going to do the drawing in a second. We've had a number of people calling in and also making pledges. We need to go out to Pledge Central and see if Maeve Riley has an update on how close we are on the challenge from Peckham and Associates here. Maeve?
I think we want to go out to Pledge Central, to Mae Varelli. There we go. Oh, there
Jay.
We go.
Jay, oh, good.
Yes, okay.
We are so close. We just need to hear from two more folks, and then Peckham and Associates will add an additional $250 to our pledge total today.
Right.
We're on our way to $70,000 by the end of the day, and right now we're at $60,040. So your call can help us reach that $70,000 goal, 244-9455.
Yeah, and if you have a question about how your pledge counts, we started the morning at about $52,000, and Dan Simeone and I were looking, and they said, well, you got to be at 75 by the end of the day, and we were like, what?
Yeah.
We're at like 52,000 right now. We're at what now?
And you'll also get entered into a drawing for Gene's new CD, so that's another incentive to give us a call.
244-9455. What's the total again?
60,004. Oh, right now for the...
For the
challenge?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, we're at 13. We need to hear from two more people.
Okay.
Two more calls.
Yeah, great. All right, so we'll get those right now. You know, I just, all I can say is Focus 580 is a resource for the community. It's a place where we can have sane, intelligent, rational dialogue without somebody yelling at you and forcing their point of view down your throat. That's why it's here. It's here to be an important resource in our communities. And if you listen to it, if you take advantage of it, if you've learned something from it, if you've enjoyed a moment or two by listening to Focus 580 and the wide range of topics and guests that are covered, is it worth 10 cents an hour to you for each hour of Focus 580 in the week? Just 10 cents. If you had to put a dime in, you know, like a parking meter, if you had to put a dime in the radio to listen to an hour of Focus 580, would you do it? And a lot of people say, well, you know, I already pay taxes for you guys. Well, the truth of it is that by the time it all filters down to WILL, you as an individual probably pay, I think I did the calculation, I think, a couple of years ago on this, a tenth of a cent. It's a ridiculously minuscule amount of your taxes that actually come to WILL radio and public broadcasting to begin with. So, you know, throw that aside. Okay, and put a value on it. Is it worth 10 cents? $52 contribution right now, 244-9455. You'll get in the drawing for the CD, and you'll also help us meet that challenge. $250 sitting there right now from Peckham and Associates. They're so convinced we have a good thing going here that they want to do whatever it takes. They'll put an additional $250 on the table just to get you to call and make that $52 commitment right now at 244-9455. Maeve, I think we need like one more call. I see one line going.
Yeah, one more call is all we need to hear.
One.
244-9455.
All right.
Give us a call now.
You be the hero. Step up to the plate. 244-9455. Right now, $52 contribution. That's all I'm asking.
All right. Thanks, guys. We got to make way for the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock.